Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show. It's Saturday, March 8th, 2008, and we're on today live from 3 to 4 Eastern Time in the United States. My name is Marcia Mary Baker with EIR News Service, and today's topic is the end of Mussolini is near. Now, we're referring by Mussolini to the Mickey Mouse version of Mussolini, and in turn, that is referring to the what you could call the Mussolini Project by certain financial interests backing fascism as the outcome of the current financial and economic crash. And that is backing an option in the election situation for Michael Bloomberg as some candidacy, president, vice president, and Bloomberg's associates in this Mussolini Project, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and Governor Rendell, that form a trio pushing really Mussolini-type fake infrastructure solutions to the crash. We can get into that. We have three guests to discuss this whole situation, and let me introduce them, and we'll jump right into it in a special way, because one of our guests, I welcome our co-host, Harley Schlanger, who's out in California. Welcome, Harley.
Hi, Marcia. How are you?
Good. And people know Harley's also Western State spokesman for Lyndon LaRouche, and he was in Texas personally live on the scene during the whole Texas, the second Super Tuesday of Texas, Ohio, and the New England the two-state New England primaries. And he will get to that in just a few seconds, but I also welcome from New England, from Boston, Allie Peribakovsky, our LaRouche Youth Movement leader there. Hi, welcome.
Hi, Marcia.
And finally, in the studio with me today from EIR News Service is Tony Chaikum. Welcome, Tony.
Hi, Marcia.
Who's been part of the crack team dishing the dirt, putting out the intelligence on the nature of this whole Bloomberg-Mussolini project, and we'll get to him in a minute. But first, Harley, I'm glad to hear you're at a LaRouche Youth Movement cadre school, so why don't you kick things off by the import, the follow-on, and the significance of what has happened this week in Texas and Ohio.
And also Rhode Island.
The
key thing was that we made a determination. Lyndon LaRouche has insisted that you have to get beyond the surface, behind the surface, and realize that the election campaign is being rigged for the purposes of imposing Bloomberg as a fascist dictator in the United States. And the impulse behind this is the accelerating rate of collapse of the financial system. And we see it every day. You don't really see it unless you know where to look. But if you're reading EIR, if you're on the LaRouche PAC website, you know that we're not just talking about a subprime crisis or a foreclosure crisis, but an overall breakdown of the financial system. And in this context, the choice of Bloomberg to be the would-be Mussolini of the United States is something that I know Tony will cover later. What we decided, I proposed to Mr. LaRouche that we take advantage of the Ohio and Texas primaries to launch a bit of an unorthodox strategy. That is to say that we're going to defeat Bloomberg in the Texas and Ohio primaries. And so we deployed LaRouche Youth Movement members into both of those states with big banners that said that, defeat Bloomberg in the Texas primary. Now, this caused exactly the kind of reaction you'd hope. People scratching their heads saying, Bloomberg, is he on the ballot? Or is Bloomberg running? And what we did as part of this was to get out in Texas almost 50,000 leaflets, the two leaflets from LaRouche PAC. Mitt Romney walks out, and then in the middle of this campaign, Bloomberg put an op-ed in the New York Times where he said, I am not running, which, of course, for a non-candidate to say I am not running was added to the whole sense that this was going on. And LaRouche put out a second leaflet. This one said, Bloomberg lies, I am not running, only dripping copiously. And so we took those two leaflets and this fight to expose the reality of the kabuki theater on the surface that was supposedly Obama versus Hillary, but underneath it was a strategy which Lyndon LaRouche uniquely identified last November, that the real strategy was to use Obama to knock out Hillary Clinton and then to throw away Obama through the scandals, the so-called Resco case and other cases, to allow for Bloomberg to emerge as the front runner for president. Now, what we did then is that we went to all the rallies, all the events in Columbus, in Cleveland, in Toledo. We saturated the political networks in Ohio. I was on a very prominent talk radio show last Sunday, the Sunday before the election, where the talk show host and a major African-American audience, Magic 98.9, we exposed this Bloomberg option. And it had a tremendous impact. In Ohio, there were very large rallies, both for Hillary Clinton. Bill Clinton spent a lot of time in Texas. Obama was there. And we, again, saturated those layers. And people started asking the question, well, what is going on? And in that process, as Hillary Clinton went back to her New Hampshire approach, which was to emphasize the economic crisis, you know, the old Clinton line, it's the economy, stupid, that she said she's speaking for the voiceless, the invisible people. And we saw a remarkable turnaround in the vote that was a vote against the Bloomberg option, which gave the victories to Hillary Clinton. And what Lyndon LaRouche said is that Hillary showed leadership. They were trying to get her to quit, to knuckle under, to leave by the time of the March 4th primaries, and she didn't. And by staying and fighting, it mobilized people in the only way people can be mobilized to save the country, which is to fight against this Bloomberg option and to go for an FDR solution.
Thanks. And also, in other words, you, in the sense of all this, these leaflets you described that were being distributed, they were all over the place. For example, in Texas, you're talking about campuses, cities, political, the big Obama rallies, is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Obama had a rally of 18,000 in Houston and about the same number in Dallas, large crowd in Austin, Texas. Because, look, the slogan, we need change. I mean, after 7.5 years of Bush and Cheney, everybody knows we need change. It's like we need to fumigate the White House and everyone take a collective shower or something to get the crud off us. But the point is that a slogan for change in itself is meaningless. And in fact, Hitler's slogan was time for a change in Germany. So the real issue is the one that no one's taking up, which is the economy. And after the Iowa caucuses, Hillary Clinton took up the economy. The question of foreclosures, she moved toward what Lyndon LaRouche had been calling for, a moratorium on foreclosures. By bringing up the economy, she's going out of bounds. You're not supposed to bring up the economy. It's supposed to be a referendum on the war. And that way, Obama can knock her out and then get rid of Obama. But by the really effective deployment of the LaRouche Youth Movement, who will not allow anyone to change the subject, the subject we're bringing in is that there's a mobilization from Schultz, George Schultz, and Felix Rowatin, who's a corrupt traitor and fascist financier, who is directing the Democratic Party in such a way as to destroy it, literally. That's Rowatin's policy. Some Democrat, right? His policy is to destroy the Democratic Party. That by focusing attention on that plan, that scenario, that strategy to destroy the Democratic Party, and of course the Republican Party, McCain is a weak candidate, and to create the room to bring Bloomberg in. By sticking to that, we created in both the Obama and the Clinton camp a discussion process. What if LaRouche is right? And then in the midst of this, when Bloomberg wrote his very prominent op-ed saying he's not running, that again forced the issue. The fact that Bloomberg and Schwarzenegger were holding press conferences in California and in Washington, D.C. to push their completely phony Mussolini-style infrastructure plan, which is to privatize infrastructure, jack up the rates, and destroy the labor, the wages, that these things are now beginning to be seen out of the corner of the eye. In other words, people are saying, it's not just that we need change. We need a specific kind of change, one that addresses the collapse of the financial system. So by sticking with going after the Bloomberg option, what the LaRouche Youth Movement did is inject reality into what otherwise is a campaign of slogans and sound bites. Now, what that means is that you now have many tens of thousands of young people who are active, who are turning out at caucuses. They're manning the phone banks, both for Hillary Clinton and for Obama. And instead of just having a vacuous high school prom queen choice, you know, the popularity contest, they're actually being forced to discuss what would the candidate do in the face of the breakdown of the financial system. And so that's the kind of leadership that the LaRouche Youth Movement represents. And that's what Senator Clinton responded to. Now, you mentioned I'm up here in the mountains outside of Santa Barbara, California, which, by the way, it's a beautiful day up here. I don't know how it is in Boston and the East Coast, but we're having beautiful weather here. We have about 100 young people, including about 20 new contacts to the LaRouche Youth Movement, discussing these kinds of questions. I did a panel presentation on Viennese school fascism, the economic fascism of Schultz and Rowetten and Bloomberg. My associate Phil Rubenstein is now doing a presentation on LaRouche's most recent paper on monadology to get to understand how we've been turned into a society which doesn't even recognize the truth, but that real science starts from facing the truth about the nature of the physical universe and the nature of man. And so we're developing in depth the cadre force of young people. Then the rest of the day and tomorrow there'll be a series of presentations by members of the LaRouche Youth Movement, including discussion of the analog versus digital approach to knowledge and so on, so that we're taking the youth that are in motion and giving them the ideas that are necessary to transform this civilization so that we have an economy that functions based on principles of physical economy, as outlined by Lyndon LaRouche, as opposed to Nazi-style economics coming from the City of London through Schultz and Rowetten.
Thank you very much, Harley. And let me just add one thing to underscore what you're saying about this Mussolini project, shaping attention and focusing on this Bloomberg option. Tuesday, March 11th, Rohatyn himself is out of his cage and will be on at the Senate in Washington, D.C., March 11th for a Senate hearing on infrastructure. And he and someone from Goldman Sachs, who's one of the leading players in privatizing in Chicago and elsewhere, government assets. And they'll be speaking about the bill called the Dodd-Hagel bill for public infrastructure, but of this Mussolini type. But with the shaping the understanding around the country of what this is, it just means it's that much more of an opportunity to drive this guy underground or worse.
Well, and it's also important to get people to recognize that inside the Democratic Party, you have Nancy Pelosi functioning as a stooge for Rowetten and Schultz. In the same way in California, they sabotaged the fight against Schwarzenegger. Pelosi is giving free rein to Barney Frank and Chris Dodd, who are basically frontmen for London-based financial interests that are pursuing fascist policies. So, yeah, it is in the open. The problem is, if people don't know what they see, they have to decide, well, does this sound good? Well, maybe we do need infrastructure. And we have to remind them, Mussolini built infrastructure. He said he'd make the trains run on time. And Hitler built infrastructure. There's a difference between the fascist slave labor policies of infrastructure of Mussolini and Hitler and those of Franklin Roosevelt and the American system based on government credit. And so this is an ideal opportunity in the period of an election to really educate the American people who are breaking out of their stupor And, you know, what kind of a stupor can you be in if you've tolerated Bush for 7.5 years? So we've got to do this kind of mobilization, and people should go on our website, download the leaflets, get LaRouche's latest paper on his experience with Leibniz and the Monad, and his new one, which is called A Doomed and Brutish Empire, where he's giving more background to this. So we're in an ideal moment in history to restore the fundamental principles of our republic and do it through the inspiration of a youth movement which is self-consciously seeing itself as a new leadership for the country and for the world. So it's very exciting, and I've got to get back to the
thank you.
School.
Okay.
Pleasure to be with you.
Have a great time.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Harley Schlanger. And next week, March 15th, I'll just stress again, Harley may be the host for the weekly LaRouche Show, March 15th from 3 to 4. But back to today, how we'd like to proceed here is before we turn to Tony on some of the fighting ammunition on what this whole Bloomberg Mussolini operation is. Allie, I just want to point out to listeners, you co-wrote an article about where I think it was it'll be posted on LaRouchePub.com in a couple days in the EIR news service. And I think it was titled something about the Rhode Island HBPA passed, and you call that a presidential primary.
Yes, it won the primary.
There you go. So why don't you develop more, following on what Harley said about the situation in Rhode Island or the organizing or that particular event, and I'll point out what she's going to say. You can describe it yourself. There is, on the LaRouche PAC website, there is a video clip. It's called March 8th, the HBPA in Rhode Island. So go ahead, Ellie.
Well, basically, I think the main thing to talk about with what happened in Rhode Island with the HBPA literally winning the primary, was passed on the day of the Rhode Island primary, is the kind of organizing we did for both the primary and the HBPA was what Lyndon LaRouche termed waking the sleeping giant. The sleeping giant being the lower 80% of the population, who, when this giant wakes up, is actually a real political force, a force that can actually destroy fascism right now and can actually go with an FDR-style recovery. So our mobilization for the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act in Rhode Island over the last few months has actually paved the road for a win in the primary, where Hillary Clinton did actually reach out to the lower 80%, and they responded. They responded by going and voting in the primary and actually passing our HBPA. I think the main thing that we're trying to do is actually to recreate the political system of the United States. Our fight that the youth movement is engaged in is a fight for actually a recreation of what real politics is. Because the problem is there is no collaboration between the constituency, the population, the city councils, the state legislature, and all these different layers of government. And the fight for the HBPA and the mass organizing in the streets to destroy Bloomberg over the last few months is actually recreated a real political system. You know, we've actually got contacts coming off the streets with us, coming off of the college campuses, and going into the state house with us, going in and talking to the city councilmen, talking to the state legislators, the state senators, and we've really created a very politicized environment. Where Rhode Island was just a sleepy state when we first went in there. And I remember a few people saying, don't expect too much from Rhode Island. You know, that they don't really do too much politics there. A few of the campuses we had first gone to were, you know, completely apolitical, and we just started setting up. We saturated them with the MySpace pamphlet, the Devil in Your Laptop pamphlet, with the two leaflets that Harley was talking about earlier, and we completely politicized the environment. And out of that, I think we created a youth generation, and in general, an effect in the population where the people of Rhode Island now are demanding that the economy is the first thing on the list, that that becomes the very major number one issue of discussion. And specifically, a return to Franklin Roosevelt-style politics, that's what the government and the United States has to actually take up. But that's what we actually have to fight for.
Okay, great. Well, why don't we, unless you want to bring out another point here, there are other questions and so forth that have come in before the show, but why don't we turn now to Tony on, I just want to mention one thing we didn't say right at the beginning, but namely, LaRouche himself is going to be on a Washington, D.C.-based live international webcast March 12th. That's this coming Wednesday, March 12th, 1 p.m. You can find that on his Political Action Committee website, which is LaRouchePac.com, www.larouchepac.com, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And the title has been Averting Doom. You can go onto that website and see more of a preview invitation. But I think he is really going to address the strategic situation from the point of view of the opportunities that we've been creating as we go along. I think he was saying this morning, a lot is forecastable. It's not predictable, but we're defining dynamics and some potential here, and so everyone should be watching for that. But Tony, and one thing, someone has just emailed Richard. And I'll just, let me answer it. Tony can dilate on it more if he wishes. But Richard was asking how much of this HBPA content in motion might be known to any of the candidates. Might it be known to Hillary Clinton? Our stuff is known all over the place. And nobody can not know it. What does someone do about it? Certainly the enemy knows about it. But as I say, just the kind of thing of the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. It's one of the leading campaigns and a focus, all the information and the motion and even a video clip from the House of Representatives of Rhode Island from Tuesday is there. You can't not know any of this. It's a question of what individuals are going to do. So, Tony, what are we up against in the way of this crowd that actually we've delivered a blow to in recent weeks?
Mayor Mike Bloomberg came in 2001. He was elected right after the 2001 terrorist attacks. The primary election in New York City was scheduled for September 11th. It was postponed. But right the day after, the Monday after the attacks, a group of the top bankers, private financiers, David Rockefeller and the whole gang of Lehman Brothers and the real estate moguls, plus Bloomberg, who is one of their set, and Felix Rohatyn, got together in an emergency meeting. How are we going to take advantage of this shock and the fear that has been generated in New York and nationally? And once Bloomberg had bought his way into the city hall as mayor in the 2001 November elections, they established a repeat of the regime that Felix Rohatyn had put into New York City back in the 1970s. There is an organization that runs the agenda for Bloomberg, and he is actually a longtime member of this organization. It's called the Partnership for New York City. This was formally established in 1979 by David Rockefeller, involving the 200 leading CEOs and chairmen of the biggest banks on Wall Street. They're all speculators. These are the people who took down the U.S. industry on behalf of London's game plan. These are the people who bet all of the assets and non-assets into the stratosphere and destroyed the world economy. They've already destroyed the physical economy, and with their mergers and with their hypothecated assets, they've brought the financial system into a smoldering ruin. So these guys in 2002 incorporated into this partnership group the old Chamber of Commerce, and they set the agenda for the Bloomberg mayoralty. They said, we can use New York City the way we did back in the 1970s when Felix Rowatin was put in as a dictator. And in this time around, we're going to have a program for the United States that we're going to put through to somehow deal with the crashing of the system, which we ourselves have brought about. That policy that Bloomberg represents and that these billionaires behind him represent is the most absolute brutality against the lower orders in society. One way of looking at this is what Bloomberg is doing in the city itself. He now has announced this past week that there are only 3,000 homeless people left in New York City. You talk about the invisibles that Hillary Clinton is mentioning. Well, the poor are invisible now. They've been driven into to sleep in crevices, or they've been incarcerated. The brutality of the budget cuts that Bloomberg is putting across in the city, and that the state of New York is putting across. Rowatin was the advisor to the governor, Spitzer. He's putting across budget cuts there. There is no bottom to this, because the money that was coming in to sustain the budget of New York City was the bubble of the mortgage-based securities and so forth. That stopped. The revenue stream is pouring away from New York City, and so the program is brutal austerity. Another way to look at this is the conference they had in Bellagio, Italy, last July, 2007, sponsored by the Rockefeller Foundation. New York City regime participated in this, and they had papers there describing what the underdeveloped countries, South America and other, and Africa, the cities of the world, had to look forward to if these people's program went through. And they stress that this is a green program. They're going to watch out for global warming and protect people from the effects of global warming. What they mean by that, and stated explicitly at this conference, was that no city in the world would be permitted to industrialize, that there would be no further industrialization, that the era of the advance of industry in the world is over, and that mankind has only to look forward to sharing a set of dwindling resources. At that very same place in Bellagio, in the conference center of the Rockefeller Foundation, a few decades before, in the 1960s, that foundation sponsored the birth of the Club of Rome organization, which said that the world faces rapidly shrinking resources and that we are going to have a brutal, brutal austerity as the population is forced to shrink under new regulations. So this policy of brutal austerity and dealing with what they proclaim as dire problems of ecology, this belies everything they have to say about infrastructure. They're claiming that they're going to solve the falling bridges and the cracking up rail lines and so forth by privatizing everything. But if you look at the past of our American infrastructure, or any part of the world where this, where a serious infrastructure was developed, as we did with railroads and electricity, and the best of urban infrastructure, these things were always done from a federal initiative with federal credits and protection to industries like the steel industry, which was developed together with the railroads. All of this as a national policy to have a rapid increase in heavy industry and high-wage industrial jobs. This was the case throughout the 19th century, especially after the Civil War. This was repeated in certain instances in the 20th century by airports and other means of developing the infrastructure. And, of course, FDR with his dams and other parts of infrastructure.
The water management. You would have man-made natural resources.
That's right. You increase the resources. The one case where this was not a real development policy, I would say, was the Eisenhower highways, the interstate highways, which are useful, but they didn't lead to a real increase in the productive potential of the country because they were misused to introduce a suburbanization of our culture, which was really a net loss. But again, that was purely federal money that built these highways. What these guys are talking about doing, putting congestion pricing or fees for people to ride on in their vehicles into New York City, or putting tolls up on all the federal highways, this is not only a disastrous idea that would further destroy the economy, but it can't be popular. And the only way they could hope to put this across would be in some scheme and scenario in the political realm where people went along with this gang somehow taking power. And we've dealt a great blow to that right now. So that's what you're really dealing with here. Just one other example of this, the brutality that's involved here. The leading foreign policy advisor to Mayor Bloomberg, as he has put his sights on being a U.S. dictator, because he has $20 or $40 billion, and that makes him qualified to run the United States. His foreign policy advisor is Nancy Soderbergh. She is a consultant in a firm called Sonecon, S-O-N-E-C-O-N, with a man named Robert J. Shapiro as her partner. This partnership is paid by the so-called vultures who buy up the defaulted debts of underdeveloped countries, and then go to court to try to force these countries to pay these debts over the dead bodies of the poor people in those countries. Nancy Soderbergh is co-chairman with Shapiro of the American Task Force Argentina, which is trying to overthrow the government of Kirchner in Argentina. They're equivalent in this endeavor to what the British did at Versailles, when people in the city of London and their friends in Wall Street, particularly London, crushed Germany in 1919 and 20 to pay debts which were impossible to pay. And then as they put the screws on Germany, the very same financiers who were looting Germany then paid the Nazis and Hitler's movement to take over Germany in 1933. This is the equivalent of what you're dealing with here, and it's the same set. This is where Felix Rohatyn comes in. He was a refugee from Nazism, supposedly in Europe, but he came here as a young member of the firm of Lazard, which was the leading pro-fascist firm in France. It was one of the central firms in England with the Cliveden set that was promoting the rise of Hitler, and that put the screws on Chamberlain to try to force him to accept Hitler's takeover of Europe. That's the Lazard company. And André Meyer, who came over here to run the Lazard headquarters in New York City and was the mentor of Felix Rohatyn, Meyer was one of the leaders of the pro-fascist group in France. He's a very close friend of David Rockefeller and a counselor to Rockefeller in terms of his personal investments. And this little gang of Andre Meyer, David Rockefeller, and Felix Rohatyn is the original threesome that put together this disaster in the 1970s of the Felix Rohatyn dictatorship.
Yeah, the
in New
1975,
York City.
Right? Municipal yeah. Assistance Corporation.
Yeah.
Like now we're supposed to have a national municipal assistance fascist corporation.
So now this is where you get the banks in New York City, headed up by David Rockefeller's Chase Manhattan, denying credit to the city, to force the city onto its knees and say, well, we'll need to have Felix Rohatyn come in to be the dictator, set up a private municipal assistance corporation, run the city's finances, get labor to go along with this, some labor stooges, and have leading bankers directly run the city. Midway in that process, in 1979, David Rockefeller set up this organization, Partnership for New York City, with the leading bankers to continue the Rohatyn initiative past that so-called emergency of the 1970s. And then right after the 2001 terrorist attacks, when they got their own man as the mayor of the city, they revived that initiative and put the leading speculators and like Henry Kravis and other people in charge of this. Rohatyn is in the driver's seat now as an old man. He's an advisor to the governor. He runs the policy personally with Bloomberg, and there's a whole set of Rohatyn's rats around Bloomberg, like Shapiro and Elaine Kmark and other of these people that are trying desperately to destroy the Democratic Party, and they've been at this for decades. That's what you're facing with Bloomberg.
And this coming week, I don't know if it's Wednesday or Tuesday, March 11 or 12, but Rohatyn is among those meeting with the Democratic Party of the House of Representatives behind closed doors with Nancy Pelosi.
Mm-hmm.
She has announced that. So the one interesting question comes from this record you've just demonstrated in larger history than the last 7 years. Is why anyone would tolerate it anymore who begins to know something about it. Now, we know there's venality and stupidity and money and fear, but Ali, back to you. You were talking about individuals stepping forward on the city council level, citizen, student activists and stuff. Could you throw in here how you think people begin to grasp either the real scale of the economic crisis, I mean, the hyperinflation, and also the smelling something fishy, I mean, the real dirty operation that's going on behind this fascist strategy in the elections. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, sure. On the one hand, you have the people who live it, right? You have people actually in the population who live the economic collapse. But on the other hand, you also have to educate people to a certain extent, which is actually what we're doing. The people out on the ground, the LaRouche youth movement especially, is we're going out there and educating people on what's going on. Because it's not obvious to people, especially living in this MySpace, Facebook culture, it's not obvious to them that there is actually a drive to put fascism into the United States, and that they're using this economic collapse, the accelerating collapse, to do it. So you actually, in a sense, you have to educate people on the kind of manipulation that's being played out in our country, in our culture. And I think specifically the Devil in Your Laptop pamphlet that we've been putting out, our mass organizing on the college campuses and our mass organizing out in the streets is what's doing it. And the main thing is just bringing them into the fight. The only way that people are actually going to figure out what's going on is by fighting for the solution. And when they see that the solution to actually put in an economic recovery when they see that that is actually being deterred, that people are fighting against that, then they actually begin to wake up. And they get a certain sense of a responsibility that they have to fighting even harder.
What the LIM have done with this campaign is really in everybody's face. In the current EIR, you can go online or see the printed copy, you see a photograph of the Benito Mussolini rally that we had outside the City Hall and down to the Brown Brothers Harriman headquarters. But the people loved it. People coming out of Bloomberg's offices were laughing at him. He is a little fascist. And we carried this into the New York State Legislature, where we are campaigning for the and talking to all the legislators on the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act that's in the works up there. So the campaign to alert people to what this Bloomberg Row and operation is has gotten into the faces of people who are at all levels of political activism in the United States. If you go on Google News at any time over the last several months and put Michael Bloomberg in, it comes up fascist, and he's dripping, and all these stories that we have pulled out and put together and thrust into the face of the people that it can't be avoided. And there is a growing resistance that has a great deal of spirit. On Monday, March 10th, the Democratic majority in the state assembly, the lower house of the New York State Legislature, will introduce a measure to tax millionaires, to raise their taxes by 1%, to raise another $5 billion to overcome the state budget deficit. And this is done in the face of Bloomberg and the governor of New York State, Spitzer, both of whom are working on Bloomberg's coalition, fascist coalition. And the people in this legislature are aware of the, if not fully aware of the nature of the crash throughout the world, and thinking through what all the alternatives are, they see the fascist policy and threat from this kind of brutality that's staring them in the face in New York City. The schools are being cut. There's rallies against that. People had rallied against the cutbacks and brutality of the previous mayor, Giuliani. And this guy makes that look tame because the crash has happened since then.
Yeah, one thing, Tony, on this New York's unfolding fight that you're describing, I understand this is a classic, the way a deadline has been given, or is that concerning? No, that's another one. That's concerning Bloomberg's deadline, along with the counterparts in the Bush administration, that by March 31st there has to be an alternative to this kind of medieval congestion tax.
The mayor of New York taking this program directly from the so-called Partnership for New York City, that's the bankers' group, proposes to put a toll of $8 up to $21 per trip for any vehicle coming into Manhattan below 60th Street.
Classic London. They implemented that.
Yeah.
The City of London did that a few years ago.
And so this has to be passed by the New York State Legislature and by the City Council. To try to push this through, the Bush administration has put a deadline of March 31st, saying if you don't pass this so-called green measure to put these fees on, by that time we will not give you $500 million towards your budget that is supposed to go to New York City. And this from an administration that's supposed to be, you know, conservative and anti-green and all this stuff. But the legislators are not buying that. So this is getting very, very interesting in the city of New York.
Right. And one thing is that in recent months, you've described that the center, the evil heart of this, in this partnership from New York City and all these really old Nazi high finance mm-hmm. circles, but they have reached out through the Rohatyn, let's work with mayors, let's forget federal government, let's forget national government. I think they got rid of the board of the school board in New York and the school board in Washington, D.C.
Right. And they got the mayor of Washington, Fenty, to join in their coalition. The program for having the mayor take over the schools and then the school budget cut to go ahead, to cut the number of teachers, to destroy the teachers' union, and to have more and more crazed programs of curriculum in the schools. That's also going on in New York City. Real fascist intervention in the schools, instead of doing what we were trying to do, say in the early 60s, of bringing in really high quality science and math, because we wanted to do a space program. We wanted people to be productive and have genius in the schools. They're not doing that. This policy is spreading through the National Conference of Mayors and through Bloomberg and Rohatyn's alliance with certain factions in Europe, in South America, and elsewhere, to try to put together an alliance to implement the kind of thing that Rohatyn said he wants, which is a global regulator. One of the really crazed allies of Bloomberg is a guy, the mayor of Buenos Aires, who met with Bloomberg in up in New York City in November. And he is down there as an enemy of the Argentine government and is trying to impose the congestion pricing down there and to say that the government of Kirchner should be overthrown because they're not paying these Wall Street and London vultures the money that they should be paying them. So you're talking about a very unpopular, mostly behind-the-scenes kind of thing. You saw the echo of what Bloomberg was talking about often when he would say we need a national unity government where we stop the squabbling. You saw the echo of that in Barack Obama's nostrums earlier in the campaign. But now that Hillary Clinton has really gone strongly for talking to the lower 80% in the economy, this puts a squash on any way that Bloomberg has to, and his people like Schwarzenegger, have to talk to the population. It's whatever they do would have to be done, you know, by sleight of hand behind the scenes. And we're not allowing the behind the scenes kind of thing to really draw a bead on the intention. You have to look at a book that came out in February. It was called Declaring Independence, The End of the Two-Party System, written by Douglas Schoen, S-C-H-O-E-N, who did polling for Bloomberg for his 2005 mayoral election. He's the partner of Mark Penn, who is a leading saboteur inside the Hillary Clinton campaign. And in this book, Schoen says, we need an independent president to come in from the outside and really crush, in particular, the Democratic Party. And he says that there are many different ways that such a president could come in. One way would be to play some games with the Electoral College, that is actually to suborn electors that are put up by the states before they formally make their choice for president. Or if you had an independent candidate that somehow threw the thing into the Congress, as has happened a couple of times in American history, then you would suborn the congressman and put them under threats. And he talks about threatening the congressman to force them to go with his independent option, if not putting his man Bloomberg in directly as president, then having a ticket that would have Bloomberg together with some other party, and they would choose a cabinet between the two of them, and somehow have a government like you might have in some Central European country, but directly under the control of this Wall Street and London crowd. So if you read the book, I mean, he's not holding back at all about the need for a brutal austerity. He constantly talks in the book, and really Bloomberg does too. If you search out his discussions on this topic, that the what's facing the country is the need to cut back on the living standards of the average person drastically.
Yeah, when times are tough, you need a dictator.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me turn to Ali again. And by the way, in passing, let me tell everyone listening, you've got to see among the many videos on LaRouchePack.com. There's one on, I think it's called Who Needs Washington? And it shows Schwarzenegger, but it shows Mussolini in action on the streets of New York. That is this
very
figure,
funny,
which is a Mickey Mouse form of Mussolini. Come back to praise Michael Bloomberg for all the wonderful things he's doing that Chaitkin just described, all the great corporativism that he's introducing and brutality. And we're hoping in the next couple shows that we'll be able to have a guest appearance by Il Duce Mussolini. But Ali, a colleague of yours, Ivan Korpis, wrote recently an article, people can read it on LaRouchePub.com, about the LaRouche youth movement fighting and succeeding in regaining the youth, to saving a sense of their soul. That's not the right title of the article. But he mentioned, for example, a big Obama rally in Boston that people went to, where there were thousands. And the process of waking people up, whether it's the sleeping giant or the young people or everything, out of the captivity of the Facebook, MySpace world. But can you say more on that before, in the final minutes of the show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, the interesting thing is the young people especially, that's really what I think the wild card is in these elections. The young people are what Bloomberg and the circles behind and around him are actually most afraid of, because we have the ability, as we saw in the 2006 elections, to turn out and completely turn the tide of the political discussion. So I think the big thing is this manipulation of young people by getting them to go into these MySpace, Facebook sites, manipulating their choice for the candidacy, being Obama. When you actually go out there to these rallies and you make fun of Obama, you make fun of their own, what they are actually doing? Because honestly, they're not doing anything. They're not being political. They're not taking any sense of responsibility for history. When you give them the chance to do that and wake them up to that, then you actually see that young people can be an amazing political force. So that's what we're doing. Our strategy in Rhode Island, in Boston, at all of these places, has been to attack MySpace and pull people into political reality, pull them into the work that we're doing, which is really the only solution that young people have right now. The kind of intellectual and the kind of political work that we're doing, which is fighting for our American nation, fighting for an actual economic policy that will allow our society to develop rather than these huge austerity cuts.
Right. And in fact, let me ask either Tony or Allie, you might personally have certain things that stick in your mind as to how there's a real, I mean, we've struck a blow. The elections on Tuesday, the results in Texas, where it didn't happen that Clinton was supposed to be knocked out of the race. But before that, you know, I think Bloomberg was all over Washington. The LaRouche Youth Movement confronted right. him, Tony. And yeah. then I think he didn't even come back. Tell me.
He was stunned. I mean, he was confronted at one point in Washington with our exposés. And I'm sure he fully knew about this. But the physical presence of our people and their beautiful spirit, their happy spirit in confronting him and what he's pushing.
This was the U.S. Conference of Mayors, or what?
It was one of these conferences. He was in preparation for going full force into Washington to announce his coalition, and he was visibly stunned. I think he was on an escalator or something when he received a package of literature from the LaRouche Youth Movement. Maybe it was a leaflet and some other things about himself and about what his project was. And he retreated personally, physically, in the subsequent days, to the point where when his coalition with Ed Rendell, governor of Pennsylvania, Schwarzenegger from California, and Fenty in Washington. When that coalition was announced at the press conference at the time of the National Governors Conference in Washington, Bloomberg wasn't there. He's the one. It's all built around him. The whole idea of it is around him.
This is this fake. Well, you just said building America.
Build America future coalition, where they talk about Franklin Roosevelt. They talk about. They describe in boring detail all the bridges that have fallen down and so forth, but they don't really give you anything about what they intend to do to really rebuild the country, because they don't intend to rebuild it. The point is that his initiative has suffered grievously, and he's flinched. He is now suffering from a world that is starting to recoil on him. His own company, Bloomberg Limited, or Bloomberg, the media corporation that has within it the special Bloomberg terminals that were used by the Bank of England and other people that built up his personal billions, that company is now facing the need to have sharp cutbacks. They're firing people. They're cutting salaries. People that he had in, like Doctoroff, who had been in the New York City government under Bloomberg, and who went in there to his company to make fat salaries, they're being cut. And there's a sense of alarm, and certainly the capability of turning that alarm into panic in his circles, because his whole pitch, remember, is he and his circle are competent. There's competence, and whereas you don't have competence in Washington, you don't have competence in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, you need somebody who is super skillful and competent to come in and rule the country. Well, his billions were made in the worst elements of the speculative excesses. Felix Rohatyn himself was a famous leader of mergers and acquisitions at Lazard, and also through instruments like Lehman Brothers, where he is now as a vice chairman. So these people who brought you this disaster have tried to have the elan and the spirit to bluff their way into setting up a dictatorship in the United States, the very people that destroyed the whole country. And if you knock them in the face and show them with some humor and some real pizzazz what these guys really are, that these are the most brutal criminals that have ever tried to run a great nation, that they've stumbled. We have to finish that job and knock them completely out of politics and finish this off for good.
Well, I'm afraid that's finishing the show, and that's a high point, because I think these people are on the run, which means evil people on the run are more dangerous. But it does mean that winning and history is on our side. And I want to thank Tony Chaykin, Ali Parabakovsky, and again, end the show by encouraging people on March 12th at 1 o'clock Eastern Time is an international webcast by Lyndon LaRouche. It's called Averting Doom, and you can see that on www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com. You can also see it archived thereafter. Thank you so much, Ali and Tony. This is
and Harley.
And Harley, who is busy out in California. This is Marcia Mary Baker for The LaRouche Show for March 8th, 2008, closing. Thank you.